Good evening and welcome. Thanks for joining us tonight for another edition of Future Focus Now. All of us for the past few days have been emotionally challenged by images and events that we've seen across this country. It is the kind of the dark side of our existence, of our experience. And many of us certainly don't want to linger there. We have to, in the words of James Baldwin, when he said that when we're in darkness, we have to search for the light. As you join us tonight for Future Focus, I ask you to step back just a little bit, put all of that aside, join me in another very special place of light where we have a conversation about music and the arts and beauty and life and love. Let's spend a few minutes in that space. I got up this morning and I tried to, as most mornings, get ready for today. And I do my meditation, I do my prayers and all of that. And I had a chance to take a walk this morning. I walked for a few miles, listening to music. And one of the things that I listened to and I was trying to, and what came to me was New York, listening to some of the events that had happened the night before. So I was in a New York state of mind. And I thought about that. And I said, New York state of mind. Who could I get to give me some inspiration about the New York state of mind? And I listened to this song, and it was, the singer was my guest tonight, Maria Howell. So Maria was singing New York state of mind, and I listened to it. I think I listened to it maybe 4 or 5 times just to give me some inspiration. My guest tonight, I am honored, I am thrilled. When I reached out to her, I had no idea that she was going to accept my invitation to be a part of Future Focus Now. She immediately accepted the invitation, and I'm glad she's here. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you Future Focus today, Miss Maria Howell. Maria.
Chancellor.
How are you?
I am great. I am great considering, yes.
Yeah, I always have to ask folks when they come on the show, particularly during the pandemic, how you doing? How's your health? How's your family? How are things going?
Well, thank goodness everybody's safe, healthy, and doing well. Going into this thing, you would have thought there would have been a lot of chaos going on. But in my family, I've been praying every day for their health and their safety. So fortunately, we're doing good.
Great, great. That's good to hear. That's good to hear. I can't believe I have you on the show. I am just thrilled to have you. You know, one of the nice things, Maria, about being chancellor, you get a chance to meet so many great people. Oh. And being chancellor at Winston-Salem State University with over 30,000 alums, 30,000 people doing great things. And every now and then, you get a few of them who really stand out. Yeah. And you're just honored and thrilled to meet. And you are one of those people.
You're so kind. I feel the same way about you. I always say, you know, my chancellor, like I'm the only one that owns you, but but you've been such a bright spot for our university, and I really want to thank you for that too. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the show. I want to talk about a number of things with you tonight. Really get a sense of you and who you are and kind of your life, and you've been an inspiration to so many. And as I've looked at your life, I mean, you have been an individual that have really kind of transformed yourself many, many times. And that has been really powerful for us, because at Winston-Salem State, we talk about transformation all the time. We can look at you, but we have to start. We can't start this conversation without talking about Winston-Salem State University. Maria, how in the world did you get to Winston-Salem State University?
Well, long story short, I had planned on, I won't name the university, but I had planned on going to a whole other university. And my mother attended Winston-Salem State. And she was also in the marching band there. She was also in the Pyramid Club. She was also in Atkins Hall Council. She was very involved. And I remember that when I was in high school, My mom talked so much about Winston-Salem State. All I could think about, and you know how kids do, we don't want to do anything our parents tell us to do. You know, we think we know everything at a certain age. And I remember saying, oh my God, I will not go to that school because they will not, you know, they'll be there all the time. That's all they'll talk about. Somehow, I think within the, I can't remember, maybe the last 4 or 5 months of high school, something just hit me and said, that's where you're going. I applied, I got accepted, and I don't regret it for 1 second going to Winston-Salem State. It was just that my mom talked about it so much and it was, she romanticized it. And I was rebellious a little bit, but I'm so glad that I came to my senses. She told me, she said, you're going to meet your lifelong friends in college. And I, to this day, have had friends over 40 years as a result.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. Yeah. And that's such a great experience when you think about coming to a college like Winston-Salem State. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, I mean, what kind of student were you? And if I had been at Winston-Salem State and I, you know, during the time that you were there, what kind of student were you?
I'm going to tell the truth. I think I was all over the place and everywhere. When you saw me coming, you saw big eyes and a loudmouth coming. I was very involved. Now, I was involved with this. Oh God, what wasn't I involved with? Pep club. I was a pre-med major, so I was very involved in that. Definitely involved with the university choir, the sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. I mean, I was involved. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Very involved.
And so you were in a number of activities. One of the things, and we at Winston-Salem State, we talk about getting students engaged. And we know that the more engaged students are, the more successful they become. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you were very engaged. Oh, did that happen organically? Did you run into someone? How did you decide to become so engaged as a student?
I think I came ready. Okay. To be engaged. I'm the oldest of 6 children, so I've always had that kind of go-get-it attitude. When I came, I think I was in the pep club the first semester. I was there helping design the pep club t-shirts, the class t-shirts. I can't remember what all I was doing, but I was everywhere. You always heard me coming, you know, and I'm only going by what everybody else says, because to me, I was quite bashful.
Oh. Okay. All right. No, I saw that. Look, I saw the wink. All right,
so. But I came in ready. I was so excited to go to college. I knew what I wanted to do. That was it. Now, it changed a little bit after I got there and started meeting other students. And, you know, it was influenced by things like what clubs to be involved in and, you know, just trying to do the right thing in school. I made the dean's list the first year I was there. Yeah. Yeah. That was serious.
when you look back at that time at Winston-Salem State University, what are some of your fondest memories?
Oh. The word that comes to mind is unity, community, because the size of the school back then, it was a lot smaller, of course, but we were so tight knit. I remember the cafeteria. Anytime we were getting ready to have a football game, those Friday nights, we would be out in the street and just having the biggest, this is the most fun time of everybody just being together, you know, and singing together, and the band would come through, and just that unity. We had so much fun being a big family. And I think that you see the word family back here too.
I like that.
That's the first memory I have, just walking and where the let me see if I can get the buildings right, the old student union, mm-hmm. right below the auditorium. Right. That road used to be, you could drive through it. So I remember many times just hanging out with everybody, just loving up on everybody, and cars would come by, we'd just be there, and it's just such a big, happy family.
Yeah. Fantastic. You got family in the background. It looks like you got on a special shirt there.
I do. And I'm going to stand up a little bit and let you see this. But one of our alums, Donald Meekins, designed this shirt. And you know, a lot, we have a lot of talent at Winston-Salem University. And
I agree.
I always try to support everybody that's got a business. If they send me something, I'm wearing it. If they, you know, want me to be involved in something, I want to be involved, because again, that community, we solidified that and formed that when we were in school. And yeah, friendships have stood the test of time.
Well, you know, one of the major organizations, and I heard from them today, the Singing Rams, the choir, I know they're out there listening and looking at the broadcast. Mm-hmm. Hey, choir, they know that they're one of my favorite groups on campus. The Wallace Simmons Burke. Hey, Maestro Burke, how you doing out there? You've been great. Wonderful. For us. Wonderful. One of the most amazing possessions that I have at the Chancellor's Residence is a copy of a song that the Singing Rams did for me, both the current Singing Rams and Alumni Rams, and that was doing my installation. Mm-hmm. And it was written and arranged by Stacy B. Gibbs, mm-hmm. and it was commissioned by Dwala Burke. And it hangs in the Chancellor's Residence, and it's a song called Holding On. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing song because Maria, the way the song came about was I had an interview with Dwala, and mm-hmm. she asked me a series of questions. And somehow she took my answer to those questions, and she got with Stacy B. Gibbs, and they arranged this beautiful, beautiful song called Holding On. Yes. And I say that as an introduction to the amazing talent and music and choirs at Winston-Salem State. Talk about your experience with the choir. I bring that up too, because the last time I saw you, we were dancing with the choir.
And you got some steps too, by the way. Yeah, that was a wonderful day. Dwala invited me to kind of hang out with the choir. It takes a lot for me, like I'm getting teary-eyed right now thinking about it, because the choir is what kept me going in college, because I was a pre-med major. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to be a music major, but I didn't know how to play an instrument. So that choir was very, very, very instrumental for me. And going back in time and thinking about it, because 1 year I was Miss University Choir, and all the friends there were members of the choir that I actually hired throughout my career to sing with me on recordings or in concerts. And so just being a part of that choir gave me a certain enthusiasm in school, because singing is everything for me. I mean, let's face it, that's what I've been doing for the past 35 years to make a living. There have been a lot of other things in my career, but the singing has been the constant. And that choir, I remember Dr. Kenshin. I don't know if many people remember him, but he, when I first entered, he was my choir professor. And I remember he told me one time, he said, if nobody else knew it, they would think you were a music major. Just because I had been so prepared. My mother, who went to Winston-Salem State, like I mentioned before, taught me how to sing harmony. I'd never really formally taken music classes until after I graduated. I mean, you know, for singing and for theory and things of that nature, because I was so busy in the lab. But that choir, just being able to go to that music department, it gave me all the life I needed, you know, outside of the community and the friends. It just made me feel very valuable. It made me feel legitimate, you know? And it is, that choir had prepared me, or has prepared me, for all of my 35 years professionally. I still use some of the things I learned in that choir.
Wow. When did you get involved in the choir?
In the choir?
At what stage of your time at Winston-Salem State?
Freshman year, first semester. Okay. I was in the choir the whole time I was at Winston-Salem State. Yeah, the whole time. I was also in the Madrigal Singers as well. And that's a select group that's, you know, in addition to the choir. Now, we used to travel around, so I loved it. We were, when most of the students were on break, we were touring.
Yeah. And you mentioned something that's still present today. You mentioned that you were not a music major. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I find interesting when I go over and I meet the choir and I talk to them, most of them are not music majors, which is really interesting. And you were not pre-med, and now you're just an amazing singer. Had me walking and listening to you today. So I really kind of appreciate that. Okay. So you're Winston-Salem, and you are a Ram, and you support Winston-Salem, and you talk about being a Ram, and you unapologetic about being a Ram. I love that. For real, not everybody does that. Sometimes people leave the university and you ask them where they got their degree from and they make up universities. You have been in a great space. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you. It's like I was, listening to a couple of your other interviews, and I agree, especially with like Stephen A, how he says is where it all started. I can't even imagine not promoting Winston-Salem State University. That's not even a second thought on my mind. It formed my adulthood. All of us were kids growing up together at Winston-Salem State. So,
Great. Thank you for all of that. You're at Winston-Salem State. You graduate, and then shortly after graduation, something amazing happens to you. Like I went back today because I knew I was going to have you on the show. So I went back. I listened to your music. I'm going to get into some of the things you're doing now, which I think is really amazing. And I hope to be able to see you in person real soon, some of the work that you're doing. But you get out and you're young, but you're 22, 23. I don't know how old you are. And then The Color Purple.
Game changer, life changer. what can I say? After I had graduated, I actually started working at the university in my major for, they called it co-op back then, but it's basically internships. I would go out and travel around to different pharmaceutical companies and try to help set up internships for pre-med majors. And I think I had been on the job like 4 months, and someone said, "Hey, we know you like to sing and act. They've got this movie, The Color Purple, that they're auditioning for." And I think we were at A&T's campus. And I went over on that campus and auditioned. Some other students from Winston-Salem State went too. And we sat there, I think, about 8 hours. And it's really interesting. I'm going to insert this. I almost didn't go to that audition. I was living with a family my senior year of college in Winston, not too far from the campus. And they're the ones, a neighbor told them, they told me, and I'm going, I'm not going over there again. I'm a little bashful when it comes to, I was then anyway. And they were like, go audition. I'm like, no, I don't think so. But at the last minute, again, I went, and 8 hours later in that audition, I think about 3,000 people, I guesstimate that. There were a lot of people auditioning for something I still to this day don't know what we auditioned for. They didn't ask us to sing or anything. They just put us up in groups on the stage and they looked us over. That was it. No speaking, no singing, no nothing. And so the thing inside of me that said, okay, they said no, but that means I need to go some other kind of route to figure this thing out. So what I did after a lot of the people dispersed, and I think I was amongst the last group to go up, after everyone dispersed, I went back up to the cast and director and I asked her to keep my picture on file. And I said, oh, and by the way, I sing. I kid you not, that's exactly how that happened. And she says, oh, what do you know? And I cut my hand to her ear and sang God Bless the Child.
Wow.
And she said, oh, well, do you know any gospel? And I said, well, sure. And she said, well, go work something out. Come back in, about 5 minutes and we'll put you back up, on stage. And I went back up on stage alone this time, not in a group, and didn't realize till later that was my screen test. I got a call the next day while I was on my job at Winston-Salem State University. And they asked, did I want to be a part of the choir? I was like, what? Yeah. So I went to, I think down in Wadesboro, I can't remember what city it was now, went to audition again for the solo spot. And that's how that happened. And I found out 24 years later now, wow, that I didn't even fit the stereotype of what they had on paper. fortunately, there is this person that was Quincy Jones's personal assistant, and he was the head of that casting of the solo spot. He decided that he wanted to go against the grain and not go for the stereotypical choir singer, an older lady. And there were some other descriptions that I fit none of them. He said he wanted this person to look like his mother, meaning his mother didn't fit that stereotype. And she, you know, played piano, she sang in the choir and everything. So he wanted someone to look more like his mother. And that's what happened.
Wow. And you, how old were you at the time?
I think I was 24, 23 or 24.
Okay. Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Yeah.
And so because of that, you know, I know people always ask you about that in the choir scene. Scene. And so many, The Color Purple is like a phenomenon. Like people know every word to the movie. They challenge one another. They know every character in the movie. Right. It's kind of like, I know everybody in my family does that. I called them today. I said, you want to look at the show tonight because I got Maria Howell on. So I'm sure they're all listening. So great job. And thank you for that. And so what did that do for you? And what did that, I mean, just for you as an individual in terms of how you see yourself? And talk a little bit about that, Maria.
That's an interesting part of my journey, because I was just so happy to be in the movie. I read the book on set. I didn't even know what The Color Purple was when I first got booked on that. It was the start of my professional career. I mean, like, it was the one changing, like, you want to turn the knob, that was it.
Right.
It put me in a direction I don't think I was ready for. Because at the rap party, there was a band called, I don't even know if they were named yet, but the 7th Street Band, they performed at the rap party.
Well, what's a rap party?
The rap party is when you wrap it up, the WRAP, rap, when the movie's done. Or a TV show is done, there's a rap party.
Okay.
And so that's when all the shooting's over and everyone gets together and they just kind of fellowship. So at the rap party, where Steven Spielberg was there, Oprah, everybody was there. I was there as well. And there was a band, they had entertainment. And the band that was playing was based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. So someone said, well, since you're with the choir soloist, why don't you go sing a song with the band? Cool. I'm like, I'm not going up to sing with that band. I don't know them. And again, you know, I said, well, let me, you know, they asked me to sing a song. I don't even remember what it was. I sang with the band, and the very next day they called me and asked, would I be a part of their band? Now, mind you, I just finished this major movie, but all I wanted to do was sing. So I got excited at the thought. And I remember saying, like, let me think about it. I want to come. So I wanted to talk it over with my parents. I talked it over with my boss, because remember, I was still working that job at Winston-Salem State. I'll never forget the day that I went. Sandy Sosnick, rest her soul, was my boss at the time. She, I talked it over with her, and she said, now you go and you think about this thing, because if you don't go, you'll be sorry. I'll never forget that. I went in the bathroom, I cried my eyes out, because I loved who I was working with so much, and I didn't want to leave, but I also wanted to sing, and I knew it was an opportunity for me to grow. And not only did I go to Charlotte to join that band, that whole staff came down to Charlotte, North Carolina to hear me perform.
Wow.
So, excuse me for that, I'm having people reaching out to me at this time. But so I went down, and I'll never forget the dates, October 4th and 5th. They invited me down for like a weekend to perform. And the line, this was right before The Color Purple had come out, because it didn't come out till December of 85. This was October of 85. I'll never forget that there was a line outside of the club, Jonathan's Jazz Cellar, up the stairs, out the door, down the sidewalk. And I walked in, and I'm going, oh my God, all these people are outside. Who are they coming to see? I didn't realize it was me. Because they had advertised that this soloist in The Color Purple was going to be performing. And I didn't realize how big the movie was at that point. So that's why I said I wasn't ready. I didn't know what I was stepping into. So I had to catch up. I feel like all my life I've been catching up to what God has had for me. And I'm a lot more confident now, but that experience taught me anything can happen at any time. You got to be ready, be confident, be faithful, do your work.
Right.
There's no shortcut. You got to do your work.
Is that your message to students today who are considering, you know, coming into the business, crafting a career? Is that part of your message?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no shortcut. You, no matter where you enter into the industry, no matter where you, like, you may jump in and be in a huge film or be in a huge video or whatever that is, you still got to do the work. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I always tell people, do not compare yourself to others. The more you spend time comparing yourself to somebody else, the less time you have to perfect what you have inside. Because I believe that we're all equipped to do what we're supposed to do in our lives. It's your job to hone that.
You know, and I went, and you've had such an amazing career and so many facets to your career. You mentioned about singing, you mentioned about acting. You've had just an amazing, television, movies. I started to make a list today and my hand got tired from all the television shows you've appeared on, all the movies you've been in. And I happen to be in, and I, you know, when I travel around the country, I happen to be in Houston this past December and just sitting in the room. And all of a sudden I hear this voice, because you have one of the more recognizable voices around, because we actually hear your voice and sometimes we don't see you. So I'm in Houston, Texas, and I hear this voice that I said, that has to be Maria. And I get up and you're on a commercial.
Oh my God.
And then I see you on other commercials. Then I was listening to, what was I listening to recently? And you were narrating something. Bottom line is you're all over the place and you're doing so many different things. Tell me about that. One, just how you manage all of those different aspects of the many things that you do.
I was just asked that very question yesterday. Just yesterday. And I was telling people, I really don't think about it too much, except for the fact I have a fierce work ethic. I know I'm not perfect. I'm always growing and learning. So I think that's part of the thirst for learning that I have. But I can do a number of things on one given day, which could span from auditioning for something, doing an actual job, which could be voiceover, and also having a singing gig. I just manage my time. Try to get my sleep and manage my time, because people are always like, you don't like to get up early in the morning. No, I don't. But if I need to be at work in the morning, I'm up early and on time. You know, I just manage by saying, this is what I have to do, and I just do it. That's it.
You know? All the things that you do, and what do you enjoy? You mentioned singing, but tell me about the acting and how do you see that as well?
I always have said it's kind of like a volleyball game or a ping pong game. You know, it's back and forth. It's just, I see me singing until I can't sing anymore. Yeah. I see me acting till I can't act anymore. I see me doing voiceover work till I can't anymore. I mentor quite a bit as well. And I love talking to younger folks to help them connect their dots. To how, like, I first asked, what is it that you want to do? What do you feel like you're called to do? Now let's take where you are in your life. Doesn't matter how old you are or where you come from or anything like that. If it's something you want to do, just figure out how you enter into that. And so I see myself just continuing to do it and just tossing it around everywhere I go. It's like, there are times when the acting is going to take the front seat, because that may be a phase or a season. There may be times when the singing is going to take that front seat. Like right now during the pandemic, the singing takes the front seat and the voiceover work, because we're not on set right now. And that probably won't come back for a little while. So right. I just keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know,
where are you now in terms of your own comfort level about where you are? whether that's your singing or whether that's doing, you know, television or movies or whatever. Where do you find yourself at this moment in time?
A lot more confident than I used to be. Nowhere close to where I want to be. I'm very confident, but always open to learn more because I don't know everything. I just know what I know. And that doesn't always translate into the next thing. You know, it doesn't always transfer. But there's a certain skill set and a basic foundation that I have that I'm very confident about. I know, if nothing else, I know that I can go into the unknown and I'll survive.
Wow. I like that.
I will.
You're comfortable going into the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Have to be. You have to be adaptable. And one of the proven cases was when I moved to Japan. And I remember the first few weeks I was there, I panicked because I was going, oh my God, I don't speak the language. They drive on the other side of the street. Oh my God, I can't read any of the signs or anything. And then all of a sudden I calmed myself down and I just said, you know what? The way you're going to conquer this is one step at a time. And 6 years after that, it was great.
So what took you to Japan?
Well, at the time I was married. And my ex-husband was in the military.
Good.
And so he thought that would be a great opportunity for me to be able to experience something new. And I always wanted to go to Japan or Europe.
Yeah.
And he was right. It was a great experience. I'll never forget it. And I still have friends that live there now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because I was wanting so much to sing in Japanese. I wanted to, you know, embrace the culture, which I did, but they were wanting to embrace our culture. So I kind of met in the middle. I would sing some things in Japanese and a lot more things in English, and my whole band was Japanese. I mean, released 2 CDs there. It was a great experience. I toured the country, just everywhere, everywhere.
Maria, how do you decide what parts to take? I mean, how do you make those decisions about where you will have your presence, whether that's singing or on stage, or how do you make that determination?
Well, with all things, I go to my core value system. Just to not to veer off too much, but there is this thing I came up with for my own life. I pretended I was like 85 years old. And I said, okay, Maria, where do you see yourself at 85? How do you want to feel about yourself and your life, looking back over your life? Once I established that, then I came back to the present. And I decided that everything I do, I want to make sure that it helps ensure that I feel that way at 85. And that way I want to feel is very proud. And I want to leave a legacy of faith and of love to the generations after me. And anybody that wants to get into this industry or not, but as a person, I want to feel good about my life. And I want to feel like it was worthwhile, mistakes and all. And so that's basically it. I use that as my foundation, because there are sometimes, even with voiceovers, people don't see your face, they just hear your voice. I will turn down, and I used to always say, I'm in no position to turn down any job, but no is a very powerful word. And it helps define the way you want to live your life. And I'm not afraid to say no to things. I'll even say no to a voiceover if I don't feel it fits my core and it goes against my fabric.
Yeah, I love that. I don't think I've ever heard that before, that you kind of went to a space years ahead and then kind of look back at your life. I mean, that's kind of classic kind of developmental psychology, you know, kind of thinking when you get to a certain space, you kind of look back at your life and you want to make sure that you're comfortable with every single thing that you did.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of the way you want to be. And I think that's a beautiful way of doing that. Are there things in your life that you want to do? Like
I got long on this.
You said, I really would like to kind of do that.
Oh boy, I don't
know. You might not want to share it because sometimes people don't want to put things in the atmosphere. You know, it's
I'm okay with that. One of the things I want to do is, first of all, outside of travel, I want to make sure I help teach. And it doesn't mean in a traditional classroom setting. I just want to make sure that people know they can come to me. I want to be accessible so that I can be able to help. I remember when I was about, oh my God, I think I was about 16 to 17 years old. I remember saying, look, because I used to have a lot of mirror talks. Mm. And I still do to this day. I looked in my own eyes. I would talk to myself and say, what are you going to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? How do you want to make people feel? You know, that kind of thing. And I remember saying about at that age, I want to help people connect their dots. Reason why I said that is because I wanted to go into the world and do things and make a difference. And some of the things I wanted to do, like become a professional singer and actor, I didn't know how to get there. I had nobody in my family that could really guide me that into that direction. So with all the people that I have met along the way who've been good supporters and teachers, and I knew back then that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to help people figure out how to reach their goals. And I don't consider it a life coach or anything like that, but I do consider it as being that accessible, approachable person that if you've got a question, ask me. If I don't know, I'm going to help you find the answer.
Yeah, and you really are. And that's why I really appreciate the fact I told you. I was really surprised when I reached out to you that you immediately kind of reached back. And that speaks to who you are. And it speaks to who you are as a person. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
You are now, tell me about what's happening with you now. I mean, you're doing some interesting things. I just saw you not too long ago. You did some singing and you did a tribute to Stevie Wonder's his 70th birthday. I kind of looked at a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And I've seen you do a couple other things. Tell me where you are now. Where is Maria Howell right now? What space are you in?
During this phase of our lives, about 12 weeks ago, we started in March 18th, Noel Friedline and I, who's a fabulous musician in Charlotte, North Carolina. I decided that, and it's like instinctively, you know, I was coming from Los Angeles. I was in North Carolina for an engagement on March, I think it was 14th. And that's exactly right when they were getting ready to make everyone shelter at home or shelter in place. And I was on my way to Europe to do another film and found myself, you know, in North Carolina for a period. And I said, Noel, we've got to start this live streaming. I don't know, just let's start a live stream. I think within 2.5 days, we had that thing set up. And so every Wednesday at 7 p.m., we would get together and we just perform for an hour. And we went into all requests. People started requesting things. And we found we do so much Stevie Wonder, and because of his birthday, that we wanted to do an all tribute a few weeks ago. So much fun. I think that's what's helped keep me sane during this time, the fact that I can consistently sing. And we were raising money to help the area musicians, because this is the area that I started in Charlotte, North Carolina, professionally. So I wanted to do my part. We wanted to do our part. And we collaborated with Middle C Jazz Club, which we opened back in November of last year. So between that and doing voiceover work, I've been keeping busy, and I've been gardening.
Mm.
Can you
very
believe
nice.
That? I'm very growing nice. Herbs and tomatoes. So and that's very therapeutic for me. I'm not a green thumb. Let's don't get it twisted. But the voiceover work, like I said, I've had to bump up my home studio booth to where I can actually do jobs that are coming from LA, doing animation. I just finished an animation last week, which I was excited about, or am excited about, just continuing to do it.
Hmm. Well, that's great work. And you talked about really wanting to mentor and also have for young folks, and you're doing a great job with that. Maria, who inspires you? I mean, I read that you said it took you a while to consider yourself as an artist. And you certainly are an amazing artist. Who inspired you? And
That's another long list. I have to first say my mom. Yeah. My mom and my dad were very, very supportive. My family, very supportive. But my every choir that I've been on, from the church choir to the high school choir to the college choir, all of those, you know, those musicians that were choir leaders were inspiring. I've been inspired by Nancy Wilson. Oh, she's like one of my all-time favorites, and I was able to, you know, open up for her before, so that was an honor. Ronnie Laws is an inspiration to me. I've known him for over 20 some years. Keith David, same thing, because Keith David is the master. He sings, he acts, he does voiceover work. So of course, I've been inspired, and I'm only naming people that I've actually met because there are others who I haven't, but just you, I want to name you. You've inspired me. I get inspired. No, seriously, I get inspired by anybody that is authentic, and what you see is what you get, you know? That helps me get closer to my truth and to my confidence in being who I am. Because sometimes we feel, as artists, we feel a little insecure with, because we always suffer from this imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. Like we're frauds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like if anybody really found out how I really truly feel, or that what I don't know, we run away from that sometimes. And that's a struggle. I think that's just a universal struggle amongst artists. And I don't know about people in general, but I know for artists for sure. So I get inspired by anybody that is just authentic. And let me think of who else inspires me. My sisters.
Your sister, Lisa.
My sisters. I have four sisters.
And Lisa she studied with me, and Lisa's probably out. She sent you a note, said, tell Chancellor Robinson I said hello.
Aww.
So I want to tell Lisa hello. I haven't seen her for a while. Uh-huh. Hey, Lisa.
She's doing well, too. I mean, she's doing very well. I'm proud of her.
Great.
So, yeah, there are quite a few people that have inspired me and just given me nuggets along the way, just stopping me and just saying things to me, and I take them to heart, you know?
What kind of music does Maria Howe listen to?
Oh God. If you looked at my record collection, my CD collection, or whatever you want to call it now, I call them albums, you would not know my favorite music. Mm. Interestingly.
Right.
Because I listen to everything. I definitely listen to classical. I definitely listen to choral music. And thank you, Diwala, for supplying me with some of that choir music. I listen to country. I listen to R&B, pop. I listen to a lot of styles because I love music first. And that's why, you know, because people always try to define me as a jazz singer, and I'll happily and humbly take that. But I do more than that, you know, especially coming from a background of doing jingles and doing a lot of session work. You have to do so many different genres. A trivia that people don't know, you know, like those karaoke machines, or karaoke tracks that people sing to.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I think for 5 years, I actually worked for a company that sang and set up the background vocals or the lead vocal rehearsal track for those kinds of things. Yeah. So I was constantly singing anything from rap to hip hop to country to R&B to soul. Yeah, all of it.
I love that. And I love that. I mean, it's great music. I love all different kinds of music. One of the things that really helped me out a lot personally has been Chancellor at Winston-Salem State has really been the arts and music and the choir. The choir has really been an inspiration for me because when I listen to them sing, I know how much time it takes to do their craft and to have the kind of productions that they do. And they inspire me in so many ways, you know. So you can get inspiration from a lot of different sources. I am so glad to hear you. That you're all over the place, that you're not, that warms my heart to be able to do that.
Now, even though I love all those different styles of music, as a kid growing up, what I wanted to do was get on stage, look elegant, and wear a gown and sing the American songbook, you know, things like Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald. That was what I wanted to grow up and perform. Now, just because I perform, that's because that's how I see myself. And that's what I aspire to be, those people, like those folks. But I listen to a lot of different music, because if you listen to how I perform, you'll see all those influences.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about the work that you do. And I think it's some powerful, powerful work. Mm-hmm. Got a chance to look at a couple videos earlier today. And that's the work that you do with Students Without Mothers. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Students Without Mothers and a little bit about that organization and why you do what you do.
Well, Students Without Mothers was founded by Mary Torrance Williams, a lady in Atlanta who I met while I was performing in Atlanta regularly at Sambuca Jazz Cafe. And I'll never forget, one Monday night I was performing there and Mary and her organization came in and I heard them talking and I was going, this sounds interesting. The reason why it sounded interesting is because they raise scholarship funds for high school seniors who don't have their mother or through death, incarceration, or what other unfortunate circumstance. And I was touched by that because I went to Winston-Salem State University on a scholarship. And I knew what that meant, being the oldest of six kids and not knowing, you know, how my mom and dad are going to afford me to go to college. That was I can't even say enough about scholarships. So when I went up to Mary and asked her, I said, how can I be involved? She still tells this story to this day. And it's been, I think I've been involved about 9 or 10 years now. She said, we'll take your name down and thank you for being interested. And she laughs about how here I still am being involved with Students Without Mothers. I love this organization, this charity, because Mary talks about the history of how she lost her mother and how her mother lost her mother. And so there is a serious dedication she has to this organization. And I got involved because of scholarships and we just worked together. I love her so much. And this Saturday we'll be hosting a virtual luncheon that we have, an annual luncheon. I'll be emceeing that. We have raised scholarship funds for over 20 some, I think, oh my gosh, maybe 40 students. I can't remember the numbers right now. But one of the things that attracts me to this organization also is that they have a life coaching component. And so they talk to every student gets a computer every year. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful group of folks. I am so honored to be a part of that organization. I've served on the board of directors and the advisory board as well.
I mean, that's great work. I mean, I think some of the more powerful experiences I've had as chancellor is to be able to help individuals kind of finance their education, to secure scholarships for them, but give them the kind of support they need in order to be successful. Yeah. And when you have, if you come from a place and you don't have a mother, if you don't have, you know, family members to support you, it becomes even more important, particularly the work that we do at Winston-Salem State University, because, you know, we see every student as needing support and we try to create as much as possible what you have in your background, a family kind of atmosphere where we take students in and we nurture them and we give them the tools that they need to be successful. I was so inspired reading about the work that you do with that organization. That's great work, Maria.
It's dear to my heart. And it's really interesting too, because I could never imagine not having my mother throughout college. I remember I used to come home sometimes and I would talk my mother's head off. I would talk till she fell asleep on me about Winston-Salem State. And here I was talking about it. I didn't want to go because I thought she'd talk my head off. And I can't imagine not having my mom during college. So that my heart bleeds for these students. And we also, we are all as an advisory board, I mean, as the members of the charity are assigned certain students that we keep in touch with. And so if they need us for anything, you know, we can talk, there's a connection that's another thing that helps me be inspired.
That's great work. I don't know if you saw, you might not have got a chance to see the last show that I did, but the end of the last show, I'm screaming, Maria Howe, you have to sing. I said, you got to sing for us. And I I'm screaming now.
Oh,
Maria, I know. I don't necessarily want to put you on the spot, but you know that you got to do something. Just do something for us. You have a great sound. In fact, it, you sound like you're in the studio.
Oh, that's a good little prompt right there.
Right.
If you want me to sing now, I can sing now.
I do.
There's a song that's been on my heart for the past 3 days and I can't get it off. And so I'm going to do that.
Okay.
How about that? And of course it goes to my favorite Stevie Wonder. Hold on a second. Good morning or evening, friends. Here's your friendly announcer. I've got some serious news I want to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could bring your joy and laughter to tears and pain, because love's in need of love today. Oh, don't delay, send yours in right away. You know hate going around, breaking many hearts. Oh, stop it, please, before it goes too far. Ooh, ooh. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I didn't know if you were going to do it. So you're such a good sport. I love you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to tell your story. You have been such an inspiration to me personally. You're an inspiration to all of those who are watching us tonight and all of those who will listen to you tomorrow. I just want to thank you so much for being such a good sport and for coming on and sharing your story. It's been a great conversation, and that's what we try to do here, is to have great conversations, and you have been a great partner in that.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate you, and you don't even understand. Next time I see you, we're going to dance again.
I know, we're going to dance again. I promise you, we're going to do it. Look, I told someone, I said, Maria and I may sing together, you know.
That's, you sing, don't you?
Well, a little bit. A little.
Okay.
No. Oh, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we'll see you real soon. I got to see you live and in person. Tell the family I said hello. Lisa, I said hello.
I will.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good night. God bless you. Thank you for your time. All right.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week on Future Focus Now.